Growing up in the Quinte region of southern Ontario, Erin Burry didn't really even know what it meant to be an entrepreneur.
I grew up in a smaller town. My dad was a newspaper reporter. My mom worked in marketing at Nortel. And this was in the 80s and 90s when there was no Facebook, Twitter. There weren't really cool entrepreneurs like Sarah Blakely from Spanx who were making headlines. So to me, small business owners were just the people who owned the bakery on Main Street. And even then, it was a little bit mystical to me. I didn't really understand what it meant to be a small business owner.
Erin is now the CEO of Willful, an online estate planning startup based out of Toronto. She was previously managing director at a communication firm serving tech companies and startups, and she was a founding editor at a startup publication. Erin says being willing to take risks is a must in order to be a successful entrepreneur. Still, she remembers calling her mother for some advice when she made her first jump to a startup, expecting her mom to advise caution.
Instead, she said, you know, you're 24 years old or 23 years old. If you're ever going to take a risk, now is the time to do it. You don't have a mortgage. You don't have tons of bills other than rent, and you don't have anything holding you back. The worst case scenario is that the startup doesn't work out. You're a smart girl. You have some connections in the industry now from having this job. So take the leap. And the worst case scenario is you come with your tail between your legs asking for your job back.
On this episode of Run It Like a Girl, Erin, who was named one of Marketing Magazine's top 30 under 30, talks about the importance of taking calculated risks when you're young. And she talks about her side business, a bike wine tour company in southern Ontario's Prince Edward County. Entrepreneur Erin Burry on this episode of Run It Like a Girl.
So today is an exciting day for us here at Run It Like a Girl because I have finally have the opportunity to sit down and talk with Erin Burry, who is the CEO of Willful and the founder of the County Wine Tours. Thank you so much, Erin, for joining us for an episode.
Thank you for having me, Bonnie. Very excited to be here. I've listened to past episodes and with friends like Eva Wong and excited to be the one featured today.
Hey, that's so cool. I'm glad that you've listened to it. I know it was a mutual connection, Cassie, who kind of introduced me to you and she's my kind of way in sometimes to some of the more tech industry folks. So I'm just thrilled that you're here. And I think maybe we'll just start. So, you know, your career to date has been pretty impressive. Did you always know you were going to be an entrepreneur? I'd love to know about that and maybe a little bit about your background.
For sure. Well, no, I did not. I grew up in the camp of firmly not even knowing what entrepreneurship was, which I think is the same for a lot of people. I grew up in a smaller town. My dad was a newspaper reporter. My mom worked in marketing at Nortel. And this was in the 80s and 90s when there was no Facebook, Twitter. There weren't really cool entrepreneurs like Sarah Blakely from Spanx who were making headlines. So to me, small business owners were just the people who owned the bakery on Main Street. And even then, it was a little bit mystical to me. I didn't really understand what it meant to be a small business owner. And so I went through university thinking I was going to get a job in marketing at a Fortune 500 company. My goal, my pinnacle in life would be a corner office making six figures. And then I got out of school, worked at a PR agency for about a year on the track to doing exactly that. And a mutual friend of mine was this entrepreneur named Sarah Prevett, who was starting a company and who somehow managed to convince me to come be her second employee doing marketing and communications at her startup. And that was really, you know, the TSN turning point, to use a Canadian reference, to my career. I think I probably would have just stayed on that path of the corporate corner office, but getting exposed to working in a startup and seeing how much it just throws you into the fire. It allows you to learn so much. It introduces you to the passion that founders have and the entrepreneurial journey. That just made me fall in love with it. And it really changed the trajectory of my career into not only wanting to work with startups and within startups, but eventually wanting to go out on my own and launch my own company.
So I guess I'm curious then, because obviously a corner office kind of career might sound more stable, might sound less risky. So what was it like for you when you decided to, nope, I'm cutting off from the typical 9-to-5 and I'm going to be someone's first employee or the second employee of the company. That must have been kind of interesting. To were you worried about where's my next paycheck going to come from? Am I going to be okay? Or is your or do you just is risk not something that worries you as much?
I think I've learned over the years that I'm not a risk-averse person. I think to be an entrepreneur, you have to be willing to take risks and you have to be comfortable with discomfort, because there are a lot of days where you don't know if you're going to have the funding to hire that next person, or you don't know if you're going to, you know, make payroll. But at that moment, I called my mom. My mom is my most trusted advisor when it comes to career things. And you would think her having this career at a Fortune 500, she would be one of those parents that said, no, stay in the stable career. This was in 2008, right around the time of the recession. And so she should have probably said, stay in the stable job, get that paycheck. Why on earth would you go to a startup when the economy is falling apart and you have no idea if it's going to work out? But instead, she said, you know, you're 24 years old or 23 years old. If you're ever going to take a risk, now is the time to do it. You don't have a mortgage. You don't have tons of bills other than rent, and you don't have anything holding you back. The worst case scenario is that the startup doesn't work out. You're a smart girl. You have some connections in the industry now from having this job. So take the leap. And the worst case scenario is you come with your tail between your legs asking for your job back. So I'm really thankful looking back that she was someone who pushed me towards the risk instead of, you know, cautioning me away from it. And that attitude has really stuck with me. This attitude of confidence in myself that, you know, every job I've started, every company I've started, I've always thought I was going to fail. Don't get me wrong. I always have imposter syndrome and I always feel, oh my God, this is going to be the one that I really screw up. But over the years, I've kind of just gotten this confidence that, yeah, you know what, maybe this won't work out, but I'm comfortable with the idea that even if it doesn't, I'm smart enough and I've built enough connections and this great network over the years that I can always go and get another job.
That is an awesome mentality. And it's also good to know that imposter syndrome is everywhere. It kind of affects most people, I think, in a way.
It does. And I think not just imposter syndrome, but paralysis around career direction and trajectory. I was meeting with, I often meet with people who are the me's of today, the 24, 23-year-olds who are about a year into their career and they went to school for something, they're doing a job for it, they don't love it. And they always say, you know, I'm having a crisis about what I want to do with my career. And I say, welcome to my life. I've had three or four of those over my career where, you know, I had a plan up until I graduated from university and then the plan went out the window. And if you ask me, where do I want to be in 5 years? I probably would say, I have no idea. Come back and ask me in 5 years. So I think it's very common for us to have these kind of inflection points or moments of crisis where we have no idea what we want to do next. And that's just a natural part of having a career in 2020 versus when my mom was working at Nortel and she was at the same company for 30 years. And when she would have those crises, she would just, you know, ask to be put on a new project or get transferred to a new team. And I think it's very different today.
Yeah, I agree. It is very different today. And so it's interesting to me because, you know, you were named Marketing Magazine Top 30 Under 30. So obviously, you know, you've been in leadership positions from a pretty young age. I would like to talk a little bit about what that was like for you, because I imagine, you know, not only sometimes were you one of few women in a leadership position, particularly in the tech industry, but you were also probably one of the youngest. And I'd just like to know from your experience what that was like.
Yeah, it's interesting. When I went to work for Sarah, I didn't know how old she was for years, because it turned out she was only 2 years older than me, but she carried herself with so much maturity that I was convinced she was in her mid-30s, not because of her appearance, but because of her demeanor. And she said it was a very intentional choice to not share her age with people and to make herself seem older so that people took her seriously. Because some people, you know, not if you're, you know, Mark Zuckerberg in a hoodie, but if you are a woman in tech, I think there's, you know, this sense of, oh, well, she doesn't know what she's doing. She's only in her mid-20s. So, you know, I think when I was put in the position of managing people for the first time and taking on leadership roles in my, you know, mid to late 20s, I always saw it as an asset, and I would embrace the fact that I really didn't know a lot about it. I read a lot of management books and, you know, I've gone through management training and I've had a business coach for many years, because I think it's a really natural shift to go from subject matter expert in something to manager. And it's you can't expect people to just make that transition seamlessly with no help. And so I was very honest with people that I hired that, you know, this is the first time I'm doing this. We're going to work on it together. I'm probably going to make mistakes, but bear with me. And I think that we'll have a good time if we work together. And I've been pretty proactive about saying, you know, the best managers in the world don't get there through accident. They, you know, read a ton of books, they listen to podcasts, they get business coaches, they go through training. So I think that's been really helpful for me, is to make a conscious effort to improve at it and to know that there's no such thing as a perfect manager, or you don't tick off a box and say, I'm done, now I'm a great manager. It's a constant evolution over time. And to your point about being a female in a management role, I feel like I've had this very anomalous experience, probably also compared to a lot of the people you've interviewed for this podcast. I went to journalism school, which was largely women. I then worked at a PR agency where it was mostly women and a lot of women in leadership roles. I then went to work for a female entrepreneur where 2/3 of the company was female for a couple of years. And then I ran an agency where 11 out of 14 of us were women and I was the senior executive. So, and now obviously I'm running a company with several female employees and a majority female team. So I have definitely not had the same experience as some other women in tech. I've been surrounded by women and women in powerful roles my entire life and my entire career. So that never even entered my mind when I was taking on roles like that, that it was a hindrance. And I feel very blessed that I was shielded from ever having those thoughts, just from the nature of growing up with a mom who is a very powerful executive and being exposed to it being very natural for women to be in leadership roles. But I also am not a CTO and I'm not a developer and I'm not one of those traditionally male roles. So I think it's definitely different if you're one of those folks.
So what a cool experience to be able to say so far in your career, you've been surrounded by powerful women. I think that's pretty incredible and an amazing opportunity. For anyone that comes to work with you to get that experience off of someone that has had those people to look up to and to work with and aspire to. So I would love your thoughts on encouraging more women into the tech industry. I mean, clearly you've had one experience where you have had that influence from women. And as you said, others haven't had that same experience. So what are your thoughts on getting more women into, you know, even from young girls into STEM programs and then into careers such as yourself?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, look at my experience when I was growing up. I didn't know entrepreneurship was really an opportunity because I wasn't exposed to it. I think early exposure is such a key. And when I was running my agency, I had the chance to work with nonprofits like Girls Who Code, who were trying to get young girls, you know, grade 4, grade 5, exposed to what is coding and what are STEM careers and why should you care about them? Because I'm one of those people who never aspired to go into STEM. I wanted to go into journalism and stay on the fluffy art side of the coin. And if I had been exposed to really strong female engineers, or if that had been shown to me as a really amazing career option, maybe I would have been more open to pursuing those things. So I think it definitely starts in the schools, and we have some great nonprofits and organizations like Canada Learning Co that are trying to do a good job of that. But then I think you have just this systemic problem that exists in tech where, yes, there are a lot of people in marketing and customer support and product roles that are female. But if you look at developers and investors, they're largely male. That's not going to change overnight. I mean, we're seeing some good strides being made with, you know, Janet Bannister was just named the first head of a venture capital firm, female head of a venture capital firm in Canada. And you're seeing a lot more schools like Juno College and Bridge School that are trying to educate, you know, underrepresented groups, not just women, but people from marginalized groups on coding and to find them jobs in the STEM field in tech. So I think those things are helping. But we're also at this interesting moment in 2020 where it's not acceptable to be a company that doesn't place a priority on diversity and inclusion. You've seen so many companies like Uber get backlash over their bro cultures. And I don't know any employer who isn't thinking about how can we hire from more underrepresented groups? How can we build a culture and an employer brand that shows that we're inclusive to people? And so I think it's actually the perfect storm for change to happen because companies are thinking about it and prioritizing it. They know it's an imperative, not an option. And we have organizations that are working on getting more people from an early age, but also people who are just graduating into the workforce in STEM careers.
Absolutely. I think you're right, because you're right. There isn't any company that this isn't high on their list of things that they absolutely must do if they want to be successful going forward in the future. So I'd like to switch a little bit and talk about one of, as an entrepreneur, one of your other businesses that you have, which is the County Wine Tours. I live near the county, Prince Edward County, and I can't wait till the summer to get out there and explore some wineries. But I'd love to know, like, what made you decide to start that business?
Yeah, the County Wine Tours is such a fun one. You know, when I meet people and I say, oh, I'm the CEO of Willful, we do online wills and estate planning, their face is like blank, or they're terrified. And then I say, but I also have a wine tour business in Prince Edward County. And then they're all excited and they want to talk about that. So it's definitely my lighter business. But it goes back to that whole, the mindset, I think. When I wasn't exposed to entrepreneurship, I'm not really one of those entrepreneurial people who has a million ideas. My husband, who's my co-founder at Willful, he's totally that person. He'll come across a problem or he'll see something and he's like, oh my God, that's a great business idea. We should launch this and do X, Y, Z. He's constantly coming up with those ideas. I am not that person. And when I came up against a problem, I would say, oh, I wish someone else would solve that. Getting exposed to the world of entrepreneurship really introduced me to this idea of entrepreneurs encountering a problem in their own life and solving it instead of waiting for someone else to solve it, and the payoffs that would happen when they actually did that. So when I was doing what I usually do, when I visit my dad in Prince Edward County, going around to different wineries, wine tasting on a Saturday, we noticed that there was no bicycle wine tours in the area, even though all the wineries were pretty close to each other. And I had been on a number of those bicycle wine tours in Niagara. So you know, it was because of that mindset shift, that exposure to entrepreneurship, that instead of saying to myself, I wish there was bike wine tours in the area, I looked at my two girlfriends I was with who are also, you know, entrepreneurial and work in marketing in Toronto. And we said, well, we could do this. You know, no one else is smarter than us if we're going to tackle this, and we have the marketing tools, we can figure it out. So yeah, that's kind of the genesis of where the seed of the idea came from. And then, you know, it's been this fun side project. It's never going to make us rich. It's never going to be my full-time focus, but you know, we've had thousands of people come on our tours. And the best part about it is my stepmom is our manager on the ground. She makes everything go. My dad is the head tour guide, and we employ seven retired people, fit people, who cycles 19 kilometers a day around the county. So it's also just nice that we're able to employ some locals and also make it a bit of a family business.
That's amazing. I love that. And so when did you start it? When did it launch?
This is going to be our fourth season. So we started thinking about it in, I'll probably get my years wrong, but I think in 2016, and our first season was 2017. So it took us about, you know, we told my dad we were going to do it, and immediately he said, oh, I'm so excited, I'll be a tour guide. And after a while he was like, are you guys actually going to do this? And we were like, Dad, we have full-time jobs. Like, this is a side thing. We're trying to get it off the ground. So we finally got our stuff together and launched in 2017.
That's amazing. I love that. So I'd also love to talk a little bit about the role mentorship has played in your professional life, both, you know, as someone being mentored, but then also now in your position mentoring others, and what that means to you.
Yeah, I mean, I cannot overstate how important mentorship has been to me throughout my career, both formal mentorship arrangements and just informal mentorship that has happened over time. Both me being mentored and me mentoring people. Sarah, my first boss that I mentioned, the entrepreneur, she has been an informal mentor to me over the years. While I worked for her, obviously that was happening on a daily basis, but she's still the person that I call when I have a career question, in addition to my mom, of course. And I've also gone through a couple of formal mentorship programs. The American Marketing Association had a program called Mentor Exchange. I was actually paired up with Shannon Hosford, the VP of Marketing at Maple Leaf Sports and Entertainment. That was pretty cool because I not only got mentorship, I got some Leaf tickets out of it, which was always good.
Amazing.
Yeah. And then, you know, I think it's just, I've always kind of kept this semicircle of informal mentors who I, you know, when I'm thinking about a big business decision or when I just need to vent, I can go to them. And that's some of those people are way ahead of me in their career. And some of them are just peers. I have a monthly breakfast club with other female founders and a Slack group where, you know, five or six of us just talk about how hard it is, talk about the wins, compare notes on which investors are jerks and which ones we should talk to and grants that we can take advantage of. And so it's just kind of like this breakfast club of female founders that makes me feel like I'm not alone, because when you're a founder, you also can't necessarily tell all of your problems to your staff because they need to feel really confident that they're going to get paid next pay cycle, right? And on the mentorship side, yeah, it's weird to be in this position where 10 years ago, I was the one going to people and saying, hey, can I pick your brain? And now I have people approaching me with that request. And so I've always made it a priority to have office hours where, you know, if someone emails me, I always have a block of time open in my calendar for those types of things. And I also do some formal mentorship through Next Canada and a few other organizations where I'm kind of an advisor to their entrepreneurs and they can ask me for advice at any time. And I've taken on formal advisory roles at a couple startups as well. So I've definitely made it a priority to be a mentor. And I, no matter how senior you get in your career, and I'm sure you find the same thing, you're never too old or too experienced for mentorship. And that will be a common thread, I think, in most people's career.
Absolutely. I think if you stop having mentors, that's when you really have to start reevaluating what's going on, because there's always people you can learn from. And what I find too, as I, you know, progress in my career, a lot of it also comes from what you're learning from the people that are asking to pick your brain and the ones that you're, you know, going out for coffee with, where it very much is a reciprocal relationship where you're getting so much from the people that that you're mentoring.
100%. And, you know, I think it's easy also to look at someone's bio and to think, wow, they're so successful. But what you don't see are the low points that exist in that career arc. And in my case, I was laid off from a company. I worked at a startup that ran out of money and had to shut down. So I've definitely had those low points. And what's always kept me going through those is my network. And so I always tell people who are just starting out, whether it's for mentorship purposes or whether it's just because, you know, you want to have that network in place when stuff hits the fan, make an effort to get out there, to meet people, to ask questions, to attend networking events, because your network is really that living, breathing thing that's there for you when you need it. And you can't build it when you need it. You have to have it in place when the time comes. So my biggest piece of advice to people kind of just starting out in their career is always take time to think about your personal brand and how you're going to build your network, because that's always going to stand you in good stead, regardless of where, what direction your career takes.
That's amazing. And actually an excellent segue into the next question, which is actually the final question of our formal podcast episode. And we ask every single person this, and I love it because there's all different kinds of themes that come out. But, and I think you've spoken to some of this, but if you were to go back in time and talk with a younger version of you over lunch, what would your conversation look like? What kind of advice would you be giving?
I mean, I think I already spoke to the importance of personal branding, investing in your network and how valuable that is. But I used to, it's kind of like when you're 22 and everyone who's 40 says, take risks now when you're young, because, you know, travel the world, because, you know, when you have a mortgage and kids, you're not going to be able to do it. But I really would go back to myself at that age and say, you know, take as many risks as you can. Don't just go work for the startup, but try launching a Shopify store on the side and try, you know, backpacking for 3 months and do all of those things, because now I am the person who has a mortgage and a business that I can't be away from for a long time and no kids yet, but a husband whom I also work with. So yeah, I think I would just go back and say, the people who take the biggest risks in life are often the ones who see the most success. You're never going to get rich working for someone else and making a salary if that's all you do. And so whether that is having a side project or aspiring to own your own business or becoming an advisor to companies and just diversifying your revenue streams, I think those would be my two biggest pieces of advice. Take as many risks as possible in your 20s and diversify your revenue streams. Don't just go and make a salary. You can do that, but think about how you can invest in real estate or, you know, become an advisor and get some shares in a company, and really don't just bank it all on one thing.
I like that. So that kind of wraps up the formal part. Now we have something that we've added this year. It's just called the Fast Three. And it's just three questions that I'd love to get your answers on to help people that maybe are looking for some more inspiration or something that can help them in their own careers or in their own personal lives as well. So the first is, what is your favorite podcast or source of information?
Oh my goodness. I was thinking about this before the show because I'm such a podcast junkie. I listen to probably an hour of podcasts a day. So I'm going to give you two, one that is a productive business podcast and one that is absolutely not related to business in any way, shape, or form. My favorite business podcast is How I Built This, which is an entrepreneurial podcast put out by NPR that interviews a successful entrepreneur every episode. So my favorite episode is episode one, which interviews Sarah Blakely from Spanx and tells her story from being a fax machine saleswoman to a billionaire CEO. And my favorite non-businessy podcast is Reply All. It's a technology podcast that just talks about current events in technology in really fun, interesting ways, and the hosts are really engaging and fun. So if you're thinking about dipping your toes into the world of tech, Reply All is a great place to start.
And what are you currently reading?
I currently have several books on my nightstand, including the first Game of Thrones book. But the one I'm starting to read this week is called Atomic Habits by James Clear. I've heard some great feedback on it, and I'm a big believer. One of my favorite business books is The Power of Habit by Charles Duhigg, which talks about habit formation and psychology. And so this one is all about leveling up your habit formation. So I'm hoping that I can get some good ones in place because I'm sure, like you, I have all these good intentions on going to bed at the same time and working out every day and eating healthy and meal prepping on Sundays, and then it doesn't happen. So I'm hoping James Clear can teach me how to make those things habits.
Awesome. Yes, I think I will need to check that out myself. And finally, who is currently inspiring you?
Oh my goodness. This is such a tough question because there are so many people that are inspiring me right now. But I would have to say I really am inspired by Alyssa Atkins, who is the founder of Lilia. It's a fertility startup in Toronto. And she's basically created an at-home test to measure a lot of factors that go into fertility for women that want to take that into their own hands. And I admire her, A, because she left a very cushy senior job at a well-funded startup to take this risk. But B, she's a female CEO who's really solving a problem for women. So I'm really watching the trajectory of her company and am inspired by her journey.
That's awesome. Well, Erin, I just want to say thank you again for taking time out of your busy schedule to talk with me. I've had an amazing time and it's just been really great to connect. So thank you.
Thank you, Bonnie. And thank you for shining a spotlight on women doing amazing things in business. I think it's really great to have voices like yours amplifying people doing interesting things. And this is one of the ways that more women are going to start businesses. So thank you.
Awesome. Thank you.
Run It Like a Girl is hosted by Bonnie Moak. The producer is Brian Long. Technical and web assistance from Dan Moak. And music by the talented Brooklyn Gillichuk. On the next episode of Run It Like a Girl, Misty Shearer spent nearly 20 years in the Canadian Armed Forces as a military police officer and a combat engineer, where she became the first non-commissioned female in the country to be certified as a combat diver. She is Canada's most decorated kettlebell sport athlete, one of a handful of women in North America to hold a black belt in Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, and the owner of a gym in Edmonton, Alberta. Misty Shearer on the next episode of Run It Like a Girl.